Hey, it's Dan here. If you want to hear this episode of the Backchat podcast without ads and get extra content that no one else gets, head to backchatstudios.com.au where you can sign up as a patron and access all of our bloody good merch.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
G'day guys, this week on the podcast, Justin Longmuir, head coach of the Freo Footy Club. Not very often you get this sort of insight to a current coach in AFL club. We speak about his playing career, that goal after the siren, how he recruited Nat Fyfe to the footy club when he hated his role as a recruitment officer, now head coach at Freo. It's a great story. We hear a little bit more about what makes Justin Longmuir tick as a person and as a coach. Thanks for joining us here at Backchat. Make sure if you're listening, subscribe to our podcast wherever you're doing that, or you can find all of the good stuff at Backchat Studios on YouTube. Enjoy the episode. It is a ripper. Welcome to the newest episode of Backchat, powered by Paywise for the first time in 2024. And we're very lucky to be joined by current AFL coach, a former assistant coach of mine, and a good friend, Justin Longmuir, joins us on the pod. G'day, mate.
G'day, lads. I've been promising for a while to come on, so it's finally good to be in here.
To be honest, I think you're probably in here quicker than we thought you'd be able to get here. We know that being a head coach is a fair bit more going on than in podcast land, so we do appreciate you coming in. Now, I don't know if you know what's coming first up here, assuming you listen to every episode of Backchat, but just in case you don't, we ask the same question to the guests that come on every week.
Oh, no.
Right? So it's the same question.
We should have listened a bit
more. Yeah, correct. That's fine. We like it if you haven't prepared. So we want to know your greatest sporting achievement thanks to Tab Touch this year, but it can't be on the football field. So we know all the things you've done on the footy field. We know what you've done as a coach as well. You've coached assistant coaching grand finals. You've kicked goals after the siren. You've played in Freo's first ever final. Big supporter of the long sleeve jumper. We know you've done all of that on the football field, but we want to know your greatest sporting achievement not on the football field thanks to Tab Touch. Dan's taken 5 for 16 in an under-12s cricket match.
Yep. Also represented Australia in fistball, but that's probably
correct.
My greatest sporting achievement.
That is correct. I was under-9 state flags champion on the beach. So you can go as wide as and rogue as you would like. Your greatest sporting achievement. Thank you, Justin Longmuir.
Jeez, it's a tough one. Did make 80 one day.
There we go.
That was my first Swanley under 15s, I think it was. That was a good day. It mustn't have been against much.
Were you a batter or bowler?
No, I was probably a bowler, but neither.
We call them all-rounders.
Yeah. I used to win all the athletics carnivals.
Really?
As a kid growing up, but.
Were you tall?
I was the only kid in my grade, so I used to take home a fair few awards, first place.
So you're from Quarter?
Yeah.
So yeah. We looked this up before because I didn't know exactly what town you were from. I think the population count's 217 and it's pretty close to nowhere.
Oh, yeah, it's a long way away. Very isolated. Well, you reckon Quarter's a long way away and pretty isolated. We live 45 k's north of Quarter on the farm. So we're a long way out of town.
Wow.
And I say I'm from Quarter, but I went to school at a place called Gabbin, which is in between Quarter and Bencubbin. When I was in my last couple of years there was only 16 kids at school and I was the only year 7. I was only boy in year 5, 6, and 7.
So he's a year 5, 6, and 7.
Won them all in the same year. Like dominated. So we used to go to Quarter like twice a week, literally for maybe basketball in the summer, basketball practice and then footy practice and footy.
Really?
During the winter. And that's where you get a sense of connection and community in the country. Brings everyone together sport. So, but we were way out, and very, very isolated upbringing.
Yeah, what was that like? Like, what's life like as a kid for you?
Well, I loved it because I was a real outdoorsy type of kid. I loved the farm growing up. So school was probably secondary and priority list between that and farming. We used to go every day, either before school or after school, I'd go out and help Dad on the farm. And Dad gave me a lot of responsibilities as a young kid, driving heavy machinery. And he used to come down on a Saturday to drag me to town to play footy because I just love sitting on the tractor.
Really?
Yeah, loved it. Loved doing all the jobs on the farm. Yeah, loved the responsibility and loved the autonomy just to try new things as well. So, yeah, it seems like a really isolated existence, and it is compared to what my kids, growing up in now. But, I loved it. And you make do with what you got, right? So,
yes,
it was – couldn't ask for a better upbringing.
Brother Troy, do you have any other siblings?
Yeah, younger sister, Carly. She's a country girl through and through. So she's up in Broome. She's a stock agent, works on, buys cattle off the stations up there. And obviously older brother Troy. So footy was a big part of growing up. We used to always knock about in the backyard, kicking the ball to each other. And Dad would knock off early and come home and kick the ball to us and teach us the skills of footy and like I said before, footy brought the community together. So Saturdays going to whichever the country town to play footy was a big deal.
Pretty special you get to play with him, like down the track at AFL level. Like, there's some brothers that play at different clubs and get the opportunity to, play at the highest level, but you get to play at a club at AFL land.
Yeah, considering where we came from, and it probably wasn't necessarily a large pathway for kids to make it into the AFL back then. So to end up at the same club and play together was, really, really special. And there's a few guys from out that way that have made it.
Who else?
Rowan Jones. A couple of guys different guys from Muck and Boodin out that way. And clearly the Northampton, story is well told. It's a fair way from us. But, I think the autonomy and the space that you get out there to be able to be creative and play your own games, and especially, I suppose, when you got a brother who is competitive and drives you as well, it's is starting to get a few numbers from out bush.
Because he was at Carlton and Freo.
Yep.
Do you remember the day, your first game together? Like, was it?
Oh, not really. I remember because he got drafted the year before I got drafted, so he went to Melbourne, got drafted to Melbourne, and then I clearly remember him coming back home, but you can't necessarily remember the first game we played together.
I don't know if you won or lost. Usually I have that in front of me, but I don't. But, I think it's pretty special that happened. I skipped over it. What was your first car? Like, you're a country boy, and sometimes these can be a bit rogue because you might have been driving cars since you were 7 years old. But can you remember your first?
Well, first actual car wasn't roadworthy. Dad had an old Datsun ute that was sitting out the back of the sheds, and we ended up getting it going, and that became my farm ute. And used to run it off sump oil and just to fall apart a fair bit. But that was my ute that I used to knock around with. And then in my first car, roadworthy car, when I got my license, was a VX Holden station wagon.
Colour?
It was blue with a white roof, had a 308, a V8, real country.
Did you paint the roof or did it just
– No, that's spare panel? That's how they were.
Oh, really?
You look back at it and obviously traded it in and got a newer Commodore, and I was always regret getting rid of it. It might be worth a few bucks now the way, holding their value.
Blue and white. I mean, that's good. Absolutely special. So you go through junior footy, clearly a talent. Drafted number two in the 1998 national draft behind Des Headland.
Probably a late developer, to be honest. Like, when I was year 8, 9, probably year 10, I wasn't, I wouldn't say I was a standout.
Very
like,
good.
I was really skinny and really raw coming from the country. I hadn't played a lot of footy and definitely hadn't been in any of the development squads. So, probably when I was 15, I started showing a little bit and in and out. Like, I was pretty inconsistent, but I suppose my better footy was probably standout. Then year 11, I wanted to go back on the farm. So when Ed decided to go to Cundon Ag College, which is about 2 hours east. And then year 11 played senior footy at Cundon in the leg team, which matures you pretty quick when you've got, you know, 30-year-olds trying to belt you behind the ball. And yeah, you might be a bit quicker and more nimble than them, but they're a lot more physical. So it tends to, mature you pretty quick. So, yeah, that was that was a good experience. And then Troy was down playing at West Perth, so West Perth reached out and asked if I wanted to come down and play Colts in year 12. And so I decided I'd take up that opportunity and just travelled down every weekend and played Colts. I was January birthday, so I had my licence in year 12, so I was able to drive the 2 hours down to Perth and play at Colts level, and ended up, yeah, having a really good season, I guess, off not much base because I wasn't really training with anyone, but made the 18s, had a pretty good carnival, and then, yeah, by the end of the year, I started the year wanting to go back on the farm, and then by the end of the year, I was number 2 draft pick, so it was a pretty steep rise, I guess.
Did you were you aware of Des Headland as with the build up? Like, was he a clear number one around the country?
Yeah, he was playing league footy, I think, at Subi at the time. So he was playing really well, and they were a really successful team back then. Like, not much has changed. They've been pretty successful ever since. But yeah, I think they were going really well. He was playing well. I think from memory, like, he's always touted as being the number one draft pick.
You get to stay home, effectively in your home state. Drafted to Freo, then never played finals at this stage. It's a startup club, effectively. Mm. You walk in the door though with a name that most people know. Tony Modra arrives at the club at the same time. Is that right? Same year that you get to the club.
Maybe the same year. Yeah, either that or the year after. Yeah.
Do you learn much of him? Because you're a bit of a high flyer.
Coming towards the end of his career, the thing that stood out about Mods is he wasn't the world's best trainer, but what he did was train at great intensity for the specifics to do with his role. So whenever he would do like leading patterns or anything relevant to his role, whether it was in the gym, whether it was on the track, he would do it 100 mile an hour. The things that weren't relevant to his role, it was a little bit meh. Yeah, the 2K time trials and that sort of thing. Probably wasn't down his alley, but yeah, he had a couple of great years. Yeah, and he was a mayor of Freo there for a while.
Look, yeah. We haven't really spoken about Tony Modra on the podcast ever. Yeah. Like, would he ever, and you, given you a forward, did you ever play in the back line?
No.
Good.
Oh, actually, I did, but okay, only one game.
We'll come back to that. Would he just get the specky bag out and just take hangers?
Yeah, he'd do that. He'd always, like I said, work on his leading patterns. And when he ever did anything towards his game, it was like 100 mile an hour and full intensity. But then it would go to zero.
Yes.
But he was really personal, good to the younger guys. Just didn't necessarily hang around if he didn't have to be there.
Now, it's just efficiency.
Yeah, correct.
We like that from Godra.
Oh, I think people of today forget about how big he was. In the day.
Not here, mate.
Big in Perth, but he was massive in Adelaide.
He's like top 10 guests on the pod that we're sort of chasing. You've come off the board now, but we were
just in front of me.
Sebi's done some good work here. You lost that game with your brother. You played. Do you know who you played against and where it was?
No, I wouldn't have a clue.
Round 22. Sorry. Actually, I don't know if this is the game. I don't think this is the game. I saw it go in, but it was. It was your debut in your first season. Do you know where that was and who that was against?
No, my debut in my first season was against Geelong in Geelong.
It was. Yeah. Shell Stadium at the time.
Shell Stadium.
I would have been there. Names. I would have been there watching you, probably.
Yeah.
You lost 139-88. Yeah. It was your only game. 5 disposals and a goal. You kicked a goal.
Joined the illustrious club of kicking it out of bounds on the full with my first shot on goal.
Did you?
I thought you were about to say first goal, first
kick. No, my first goal was a real cheapie, actually. I think Stephen Coops crumbed it 15 metres out from goal and drove through the pack and found me in the goal square and got off the board with a easy one.
That's good because we've actually surprisingly had plenty of people with first kick, first goal, but I think you might be our first kick out of bounds. On the
what happened?
Marked it on Ben Graham about 40, 35 out, kicked it from about 40 on a 45 degree angle and off the side of the boot. Yeah. out of bounds on the full.
At least you didn't miss. You didn't get it behind. Like, yeah, it's not a blemish on the record. No one knows about the out of bounds on the full.
Well, they do now.
Very good. Don't worry, we'll find the footage of that as well. Now, what's it like getting a Freo at that time? Like I said, it hasn't been a successful club at that point in time, but you do go into an era of decent success for the footy club. What's it like when you arrive and who are the leaders? What do you learn?
Well, my first year, and whether it was first year, first 2 years, we were still under the old grandstand at Freo Oval. Wow. So as you drive into Freo Oval on the right, the Springer's got his gym there. That was our home for first year and a half, 2 years. So the facilities weren't great. And remember, we had to go down towards the post office down near the train station in Freo our coaches had offices there. If we wanted to do vision, you had to go down there and see the coaches. So it wasn't the greatest setup. And then obviously moved into the new facility, which was brand spanking back in the day and one of the better facilities. Oh, it was just the thing that I remember when I first came to the club was people were really passionate about Fremantle. We had guys guys that had played a lot of waffle footy, but they were really passionate about building the club from the ground up. It's been well documented. We didn't get handed too many things from the AFL when we were introduced to the club, but no one ever really talked about that. All the players wanted to do, and especially the senior players, were wanting to make sure we build a really good foundation for the club to grow off. So that's probably my lasting memory.
2003, made your first final series, played in an elimination final against Essendon. Is that a big moment for the Freo Footy Club?
Yeah, that was massive. I remember there had been probably 4,000 or 5,000 people at Freo Oval when we trained,
really?
Which is a little bit overwhelming. And probably it didn't help us perform too much weekend, given that we were probably got a little bit energised and excited before the game came around. There was a lot going on, and obviously a lot made of it as well. So, it was a good experience, but the game didn't go down as well as we would have liked.
What sort of player and teammate were you? How would you describe yourself now, being a coach and seeing the different personalities that you would have seen over the last 10 years? What were you?
I look back on my footy career with some regret. I was probably too much of a good teammate at times. Probably went out a little bit too much at times. Maybe would like to pull that back a little bit. Don't tell the players now that.
No, I think it's good to be honest about it, right?
I think I was a good role player, and I think my commitment to the team was really strong. I felt towards the back end of my career I didn't really enjoy it because I had a chronic knee injury, which was getting worse and worse, and I wasn't able to train. And 2006, we had a good year and made the prelim final and won 9 in a row, and it was probably the best footy year I've been involved in. But I trained twice for the whole year and was trying my hardest just to get up for games and wasn't performing to the level I wanted. And when you're in rehab a lot, you become really selfish and you think about yourself, naturally trying to get yourself up. Looking back on that, I didn't enjoy that period of, my footy career.
It's fair. Seb has tracked down with your brother. Round one, 2000, Freo lost 129-107 versus
shootout.
Geelong.
Shootout.
So the same, you debut against Geelong and then you play your first game with your brother in Geelong. I just wanted to chase down if you did get a win with him at all. I think you did win some footy with him.
Yeah, would have.
It does say as well, 20 losses in a row in a stretch from 2000 to 2001.
Yeah, that was...
That's pretty brutal.
Yeah, 2001 was brutal, really brutal. Well, we were a really young team. Me, Hayes, Pav, that sort of generation of player, we were 1 or 2 years into our careers, a handful of games. We lost the first 18, I think, for the year. Our first win was against Hawthorn at Docklands. Not sure what it was, Colonial Stadium or Telstra Dome back then, when they used to paint the sand, make it look green on television.
Right. It's a spray painter.
Yeah. And we came from behind and won, and we managed to scrape a couple of wins at the back end of that year. But it was pretty brutal. clearly.
Yeah. After not being able to sing the song for a while, it must have been nice to get one off the after 20.
Well, yeah. No, how many of us remember the words?
Yeah, correct.
It's a pretty basic song to remember, though.
Yeah. Correct. Oh, we like it, though. There's a few other teams in this town we don't necessarily like, but we won't get into that, Justin. That is what we're saying. Now, 2005, as you spoke about, wasn't a successful period you walked into, but really, if you look at the list and the way Freo went, it got, you know, every year kind of got better and better. Your first final, 2003, 2005. I don't know if this is your most iconic moment, if it's what you see, but I certainly enjoyed it. You kick a goal after the siren to win a game against St Kilda, round 22. Talk us through it.
Yeah,
and don't before you start pretending you haven't told this story before that you don't know.
Definitely told it. I get asked about it a lot. I remember clearly late in the game, and I think I was on the 50 meter arc, and the ball had gone inside our 50, and then St Kilda won it, and they'd got through us. And I think it was Justin Peckett was on the wing, and he had no real options to go to. And he just got mowed down by Luke McFarlane, who's very quick.
Yes.
One of the quicker players.
Can they call
him
Woosh?
Yeah.
Woosh?
Clearly, because of his speed. But yes. He mowed him down. And I remember thinking, he's just going to roost this in. So I thought he'd kick it straight towards goal. So I managed to get on the bike and, yeah, just managed to time it really well. And obviously launched on Hayes, took a massive screamer on him. I just got over the top of him and held on to it. And then not long after getting off the ground, the siren went, I think, from memory. And, yeah, it's funny. Like when people will say, oh, we're thinking about the scoreboard, we're thinking about the, you know, what happens if you miss and this and that. And I couldn't really clearly say that. All I was thinking about was my routine. And I remember clearly thinking that I struggle with my goal kicking is when I don't get off the mark far enough. So I marked my spot like I usually would off the mark, and I thought, oh, I'm just going to come back a little bit further because I knew I had the distance. I'm just going to come back a little bit further so I can get some good momentum and I don't have to worry about getting too close to the man on the mark. And then got back to the end of my mark, and I used to have a cue of momentum through. And really clearly remember thinking that, and obviously flushed it then carried on like pork chop.
Well, that was my next question. Okay, you're thinking about your routine then. What happens to the celebration?
Well, I think that was almost why it just boiled over a little bit, is because I was so focused in the moment, and part of my routine wasn't celebrating it wasn't thinking through my celebrations after. So clearly got a little bit carried away and ran to the crowd, and you know, a number of years later Nick Nat copied me.
So
pretty much from exactly the same spot.
Great.
But looking back at the replays, guys doing handstands and, five guys on the mark, and guys oblivious to it at the time. So, you do a lot of work on the mental game as a player, and especially as a forward, you do a lot of work on your routines and that type of things for it to stand up in those moments, and you don't get to test them that often in that type of pressure anyway, so... Yeah, my vivid memory is the fact that it held up under pressure. So,
who did celebrate the best? Because I was going to say, if you didn't mention it yourself, I remember as a player, Nick Nat, I'm sure you're at the club at this stage.
Yeah, yeah.
Nick Nat kicks the goal after the siren against Kangaroos.
Yep.
And in the team meeting Monday, Simo, or one of the guys, one of our techs, clipped the two kicks together and had them side by side.
That's
great. And it's like... It's identical. And the thing that was identical, Dan, was both of these blokes didn't go to their teammates first. They went straight to the crowd. And it was very funny team meeting. I remember it like it was yesterday. So who did it better? So
I think I got a bit deeper into the crowd than Nick. He sort of was a little bit – he didn't commit as much as he could have.
You jumped the fence.
No, close to. Yeah, a bit of carry-on, a bit of carry-on.
So, did you the snag that you took, do you attribute those to the gloves at all? What was the deal with the gloves?
Yeah, don't know. I just felt, probably a little bit more comfortable in a glove at times. Yeah, I don't know.
You've got to get permission now this year.
Yeah, you're not allowed to do it. Trav Cloak ruined that for everyone when he wore the real grippy stuff.
39 miles.
Yeah.
Where did you get your gloves from?
Not sure. Just through the club.
Like, right.
Back then it wasn't A lot of guys were wearing them back then.
Lynchy used to get his from Bunnings. Like, used to go down and get the box cutters. The 1,000%.
They weren't like footy gloves. They were just moving gloves. Yeah.
Not sure they get ticked off now.
So hearing you talk about your goal kicking routine, you've had off the back of your playing career, certainly worked with some really great forwards. I mean, in time at West Coast, Josh Kennedy jumps off the page, and certainly he went through a lot of ins and outs with his routine.
Mm.
Did you use, you know, most coaches do, but that those experiences, not only kicking goal after the siren, but you as a player, did that help you teach players like Josh Kennedy and others?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. You always draw on your experiences. It doesn't matter what industry you're working in or what you're talking about. You always draw upon your experiences. You don't necessarily try and ram your experiences down players' throats or necessarily talk to them about your experiences, but you try and lean on them to try and garner an understanding of what the player might be going through, good and bad. Like, you know, you probably reflect on more of the things you got wrong, and you probably don't want the players to do some of those things more so than the stuff you got right.
Yeah. It's a short career in the end. 2007, you hang up the boots, you're drafted in 99, so it's not a long one.
No.
What's that like, making that decision? I mean, you mentioned it before.
Well, it was really easy for me.
Right.
Yeah, at the end of 2006, my knee was, yeah, no good, and sought some opinions from three or four different surgeons around Australia. Couple of them sort of said, oh, we could do this, we could do that. And then a couple of them said, do you want to be able to run around with your kids?
Wow. Really?
So I got to that point, and it was like, well, if that's what you're putting on the table, it's probably best not to push on, because I wasn't playing. I didn't feel like I could function well enough.
Yes.
So, yeah, the decision was pretty easy. And at the end of my career, I had an osteotomy. Osteotomy was where they pretty much cut through the bone on your leg, and they put a 13 mil wedge on the outside. So now the weight goes through the inside of my knee rather than the outside of my knee. That was, yeah, pretty torturous and long rehab. So I got that done straight after, and, yeah, the knee's been better. Like, I can still function, still get out there and have a kick.
But you're not playing in an All-Stars game anytime soon.
No, it's a good excuse not to do that sort of stuff.
Yeah, correct.
In 06, West Coast win the premiership as a player for Freo. Does that hurt? Do you remember feeling like it's stinging a bit more than another team winning a premiership?
Not really. No, I think every grand final day you sort of you go or you watch, and as a player you hope to get there, or wish you were part of it, but you hope to get there. And as a coach, that doesn't really change either. So, yeah, 2006 felt like we were really competitive, and we were really competitive actually against West Coast. I think we won both derbies. But we played Sydney away in the prelim, and they beat us pretty comfortably, even though I felt like we had some opportunities in that game to make it a lot closer. So it was probably because we got to the prelim, probably why it maybe hurt a little bit more, rather than just, you know, it was West Coast that won it. Because once you get that close, well, you're no guarantee, eh, to get back there.
Mm.
So you got to make the most of those chances when you get, especially to the finals, or especially to the last four.
Did you always want to coach?
No, I didn't. Like, clearly I was always wanted to go back on the farm. So up until you know, early 20s, I was set on that. As I got more into my life in Perth and met a Perth girl, and I started acclimatizing to the city, it became less of a reality. And yeah, once I retired, I was in a fortunate position, because I had a couple of years left on my contract. So, club offered me a job in recruiting, did recruiting for a couple of years, and first year, it just wasn't for me. Well, I enjoy going and watching footy, but, you know, footy clubs are about being around each other and having that companionship and building relationships and, yeah, being a part of a team. And although the recruiters play a really key part, they're offside a fair bit. Especially back in the day, I was doing my reports from home, didn't have an office at the club or anything like that. So what didn't go into the club that much, and probably just didn't rate that part.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Yes. I was going to ask, who did you bring to the footy? Who can you put
Want to drop too many names, but
go on.
No, my 2 years in recruiting, we had 25 picks in 2 years. It was like start of a fresh rebuild.
Busy.
And that was I think the first year was Sonny's draft. Right. Not that I can claim
tick.
Sonny.
Yeah, tick.
And the second year was Fifey's draft.
Yeah, tick.
Great. So,
two-time brother.
No, I probably don't take much credit for Sonny because everyone rated his skill and boys. And Stephen Hill was probably my pick. I'd take. I'm joking with that because probably the thing that I do like about recruiting is when you get to the end of the year and everyone's got opinions on different players and you don't always align in those opinions, but you have it out and debate the strengths and weaknesses. And recruiting's about predicting, I suppose, where the player's going to end up, not where they are right now. So some players are at different stages of their careers. Some are playing league footy. Some have just burst on the scene playing Colts. So back in my first draft, it was Daniel Rich. I think he'd won 2 premierships at
Subi.
It didn't have much to build on physically. Great left foot kick. Probably was a sure bet in terms of being an AFL player. But Hilly had played 1 year of Colts footy and 1 really good year of Colts footy. But trying to predict where he was going to end up in terms of his maturity of his body and those types of things was a little bit tricky. So that was really hotly debated within the footy club who we would pick, and in hindsight, I don't think there was a loser.
No, like
both teams ended up really well off out of those picks.
But someone like a Nat Fyfe, like he goes on and wins 2 Brownlow medals, and no one probably ever is sitting around looking at someone and saying, "Well, he's going to win multiple Brownlow medals." And I think this is probably fair to say, especially Nat Fyfe, he's a kid in Aquinas. He's a forward. I don't know. You tell us. What was the chat around Nat Fyfe? Was he going to grow into a midfielder like he has?
Well, I can't remember that talk. No, been had, especially the midfield stuff. He was not similar, but he was a country boy.
Yeah.
Really skinny. Naturally, just a great reader of the play. Quite rangy back then. Could do some really freaky stuff in the air and at ground level. Yeah, but like I said before, recruiting is about having a vision for these players and where they're going to end up. And I don't think anyone sort of thought he was going to become the midfield beast that he became. And that's testament to his work ethic and character to be able to build his body and get to that level. But I remember watching him at Subiaco Oval. I think it was like maybe a Claremont Colts grand final, and just the way he moved. But you just knew, he was something special. Could read the play. Like I said, do it in the air, do it at ground level. Horrible matchup for a half-back flanker. So
Should try and play it on him, Jalen. Not overly fun.
No, a few have tried over the years.
Correct.
When you start applying for coaching jobs, do you put Nat Fyfe on your resume? It's like brought Nat Fyfe to the club.
Not really. If I was still in recruiting, I might. Yeah. So actually the second year I was in recruiting, But sort of Phil Smart was the head of recruiting back then, and he was great in my transition from being a player, and just said to him, I don't know whether this is the pathway I want to take. I wouldn't mind doing some coaching. Do you mind if I be a midfield coach at West Perth? So I went and applied and got a job under Bill Monahan as a West Perth midfield coach. And that was my first transition into coaching. And from the moment I took it up, I really loved it. I just, the idea of being able to work with players during the week and then trying to, you know, see if they've been able to, you've been able to instill that knowledge and understand that, and then to see them go out and try and execute on the weekend, something that I really enjoyed from the start. And, I spoke about the end of my footy career, like feeling like I was really selfish. Like, I felt like coaching forces you to be selfless and you really care and give to others. And I really enjoyed that aspect of it from day one.
So how do you look back on your time at West Coast? You were appointed there in 2010 under John Worsfold, then coach, and then transitioned to some time with Adam Simpson as well. So what's that timeline look like for you as a coach? How do you look back on that?
Yeah, I loved my time there. And it's probably not the right thing to say in a two-team town, but I got to the end of 2010 at Freo, and I'd been there for, you know, over 10 years, and I just felt like I needed a change. I needed to see how our culture, how footy department worked at another club. And I had a young family at the time, so the options were pretty limited.
Yeah.
Go hat in hand and beg for a job down the road. And, I had a couple of interviews with Neil Danaher and Woosher, and managed to get a gig and started as a development backline coach and worked my way up to forward line assistant coach the next year. I loved my time. I got some really good opportunities. Met some really good people who helped invest in my coaching career, and Neil and Gavin Bell, Phil Walsh early days, like they really invested in me as a young coach. And I was really curious about being the best coach I could be, and they pushed me in the right direction. So like in the end, like I wouldn't be where I am now without that time. And footy clubs, when a senior coach changes, a lot changes. So I felt like at West Coast, I got to stay at the one club, but learn two different footy departments. The way Woosher was versus the way Simo was in terms of the way they operated, the way they set things up was a lot different.
Yeah.
So I felt like I got some really good experiences over that time.
You've been, your whole coaching career, you've coached with some incredible coaches. You mentioned a couple there, John Worsfold, Phil Walsh, Adam Simpson, time at Collingwood, Nathan Buckley. You've had a good tutelage and people around you, like some really good mentors.
Yeah, that. And, big part of it is making sure you get the opportunities that round you as a coach, and felt like I was able to learn from some really special football people, but also, got great opportunity to be able to lead different lines, look after different aspects of the game, coach different skills within the game plan. So, I thought the experiences, really rounded me out. Like mentioned Walshy. Walshy, just to be able to work with someone like that who was so enthusiastic and knowledgeable about coaching, let alone footy in itself, to get those opportunities as a young coach to sit in his office, for a couple of hours talking about coaching in America and American sport and different tactics of the game and different people he'd met and different experiences he had had. It was a good stepping stone. Met Neil Danaher as well. He was phenomenal base of knowledge, and his care for young coaches, his want to improve the skill set of young coaches, and then Gavin Bell following on from that, it was a good environment to walk into.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing looking at your coaching career. You assistant coach in a couple of losing grand finals, so 2015 with West Coast as forward line coach, and then 2018 at Collingwood as backline coach. Now, this is a shout out to one of our good friends, Alex, on socials. I've absolutely plagiarised this question, but it was too good not to. So 2017, your last year at West Coast, you're the forward line coach. You move in 2018. I'll come back on why. Can assume the answer, but would like to hear from that. But what's that like coaching forward line in West Coast 2017 to then back line in 2018 and you're coaching a grand final against a forward line in which you played a lot, a big hand in developing?
Yeah, yeah, it was.
And the team as a whole, and you know, West Coast as a whole.
Yeah, well, I obviously knew the team well. It was a challenge. But we'd lost a few of our tools as well. We were really short back line, so we were sort of making do with what we had. I got an opportunity to obviously coach the back line for the first time at Collingwood, but also coach team defence as well. So, yeah, it was a great experience, even though it was pretty daunting at the start. Because, it was walking into the unknown a little bit in terms of never lived in Melbourne. Mm. Coaching at Collingwood is a big club. Bucks was under a little bit of pressure at the time. New job in a new environment. It was pretty daunting at the time. But, we got our mojo going. And, coming up against, Lecker and JK. And I knew, always, pictured them at their best as well. So, it was pretty daunting. Not to mention the midfield. Not to mention the back line as well. And someone who did a pretty good job on DeGoey that day in deep back.
Look, we can talk about it if you want, but this isn't about me. I just, off the back of that question, it must have, I know you're very good at, as you said, as a player, being the team man, but you personally that day, that's certainly a unique position to be.
Oh, yeah, it was. It was. And, I don't know. Like, at the end of the game, I was really disappointed, clearly. But part of me was happy for the guys at West Coast. Like, I know how much work everyone had put in. Mm. I don't know. Some of those guys are sort of coming towards the end of their careers as well.
And some were your friends, right?
Absolutely. And I knew the coaches really well, had good relationships with, all the coaches. So, it was a mixture of emotions after the game.
On that day, can you lean on anything from your experience at West Coast, intel, or is it basically just completely fresh at that point of the season?
No, bits and pieces. You sort of know some of the rotations, what some of the players are going to do if they get tagged, those sorts of things.
Because Bucks must have been like, here we go. Like, I had the guy.
The inside word.
Yeah, a little. I mean, maybe, but you got to be able to do it, though. I think everyone knows what the good teams are going to do.
Yeah.
You look at Collingwood now. You know what they're going to do. look at Melbourne. You know what they're going to do.
You've got to be able to stop them.
You know how they play. But still, you've got to be able to stop them. Mm. And, you can try and nullify players and try and get matchups that you might think that they might not like as much as others. But, you still got to be able to stop it. Mm. And we're in front for a long period of that game.
Yeah.
So, we nearly got there.
There's some pretty good audio. It's good audio. It's good insight in your coach's box at the end of the game when Sheeta's lining up for goal. And I don't remember the exact line, but as we've been chatting, I do remember Bucks asked you whether you thought Sheeta had it in him or something like that. And you said, I think you said it's a pretty straight kick, something like that.
No, I said he'll kick it. I didn't say he's a straight kick.
That's very good because Sheeta is not a straight kick. You didn't say that, I will.
No, I didn't say.
But you said
I think you'll kick it. Because what else do you say? What else do you say? But really, the only thing you need to think about is what do you do if he does kick it?
Yeah.
So by saying he's going to kick it, hopefully you sort of start thinking about, do you need to go in to win the game or one of those modes? Left footer on that side with his big left foot arc. Yes. I thought he might slot it, but
the crystal balls come out. Now we've chatted to you for 45 minutes. This always happens. We get too interested in what's actually going on. Haven't spoken to you about being head coach of Fremantle. What's that moment like when you confirm that's you've obviously applied and gone through a process and when that's confirmed? What's that feeling like?
Oh, it's a nice emotion, right? Like when I went into coaching, always had high ambitions of being best coach I could be and being a senior coach.
Yeah.
But I always had the caveat that I was never in a hurry, and I would always wait for the right opportunity and an opportunity when I felt like I was well-rounded and ready. And it just happened to be the job came up when I felt like I was had those experiences at Collingwood and was ready. So, yeah, applied, put a lot of time and effort into the application, and it's a great process to go through, to be able to get all your thoughts out of your head and put them in a document and then be able to present them. But that emotion doesn't – the emotion of, like, you know, joy and this is a great achievement doesn't hang around for a while, for long. Got to get the kid – got to get the family home, got to start work, got to do the media, got to – and all of a sudden you're in the senior coach mode pretty quickly. And then you got to think about the whole program. How's the whole preseason going to unfold? How are you going to implement the game plan, culture, all that sort of thing? So, you get to work pretty quick.
You think, oh, shit, like, now I have to actually go and do all those things I promised I could do it during the interview.
Yeah, pretty much.
What is the application process? Is it like a 100-page document? Like, I'm expecting – I don't know what to expect with a head coaching position application.
Yeah. I lent on some people to help me in terms of the format and how it should flow, that type of thing. I was very fortunate in my last couple of years at West Coast, I did a level 4 coaching course through the AFL. And that sort of, as an assistant coach, you're on the treadmill week to week and your weeks look very similar. And you know, review the game, prepare for the next, watch vision at the same time, talk to the players about the same thing, do the tapes. And you're in that mode. The level 4 coaching course lifts you out of that and gives you an ability to, you know, look at things a bit more bigger picture as a senior coach would. You get a bit of a lens on list management, all those type of things. So, and then at the end of the level 4, you have to do a presentation, and it's a mock presentation to a board pretty much, or a senior coaching committee. So that was a good experience, get some feedback and a few other things I could have done better. Not a massive fan of role playing, so it didn't go that well. And then, but the document I put together was probably about 90 pages.
Wow.
And I put it in a binder and gave it to the people who were doing on the committee. And you do an interview at the start, and then you got through to the next round, and then you do a formal presentation to the committee, which I felt was pretty relaxed. Like, it was pretty relaxed, and it wasn't necessarily me standing in front explaining or going through my presentation. It was more of a Q&A, deeper dive into things that were in the presentation. And then, you know, clearly you go through style of play, how you lead the coaching group, you know, dig really deep into some of the things in the game plan that you can change, and you talk about the list, and it's goes for about 3-4 hours. So it's pretty
intense.
It's pretty intense and demanding, and you're pretty exhausted by the end.
Is there anything that jumps off the page looking back over your time as Freo coach that you didn't expect as a head coach, that you know, either challenges or positive things or things that you didn't know until you knew? I'm sure lots.
Well, there's lots, but yeah. I knew it was a really demanding job. So when all those things pop up, you sort of think, well, it's just the job. And Neil Danaher gave me some advice. When I got the Fremantle job, he said, people talk about work-life balance as senior coach. Work-life balance isn't a thing. You just got to be really strong in your priorities. So if your priorities are your job and your family, make them your priorities, because you won't have a lot of time for all the other stuff you've got time for now. And it's pretty true. And you got to just make sure that you prioritize those two things, because a lot can consume you if you don't. And you don't have a lot of time for other stuff. And if that other stuff starts eating into those priorities, you're probably not going to do a very good job. So I try and live true to that. Don't get it right all the time, especially at home, by helping out enough. But there's not a day where you couldn't be working as a senior coach.
Yes.
And you think you've churned out all this work and it might be 10 o'clock at night and you think, geez, I'm on top of it. And then you go and lay down in bed and you think, oh, I forgot to do that. And I said to my wife the other day, I think I could work for a week straight and that thought would still pop into, oh, yeah. I should have called this player or I should have asked this player about that or should have showed him that bit of vision. Not that I do a lot of that. There's so many things you can do if you want to as a senior coach.
Is that why assistant coaches are so important for you?
Oh, critical.
Yeah.
Critical. And when you've got assistant coaches that you trust, they will do their job, it takes a lot of time pressure off you as a senior coach. And I'm very fortunate at the moment. I think I've got a really good coaching team around me that I trust to do their job. So that does take a lot of stress away from me. But there is certain things that only I can do or I'm the decision maker of. So, just striking that balance.
I mentioned before we came online here, JL, that wasn't going to be a lot of current footy stuff because I said you can probably consume that content somewhere else. This is a bit more of a journey piece, this potty. But I was thinking about before we chatted the pressures as a player versus the pressure as coach. Are they very different things? Are they I don't know. You've done both. So I haven't.
Some ways they're the same. You probably as a player – you go through different stages of your career, right? Like early days, the pressure's on you to remain in the team or first to get a game and then to remain in the team. And then once you start feeling comfortable in the team, it becomes around being a consistent performer and winning and you think a little bit more holistically about the team.
Then leading, absolutely.
So you feel different sorts of pressures in your footy career. But as a senior coach, you do feel the pressure of the whole footy club. That's not saying you should, but you do because you know winning and losing affects all aspects of the footy club. So you do feel that burden as a senior coach.
It must also be hard because, like, a lot of the burden falls on you from even just fans because, like, when you're a player, you're one of 22 on the field and maybe you have a rough game, but, you know, usually a game isn't lost because of one person, but I feel like fans look at the coach straight away like, well, there's a problem. Like that
lost,
must be
lost coach's fault.
You get lost the game because of something the coach did. Like that's so different to obviously having to deal with that as a player.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, and pretty much you get judged externally by the media, by fans on win-loss. So, and that comes back to the coach. So, but that's part of it. Like, yeah, it's not all beer and skittles being a senior coach. Like it's a tough gig. And you know, I get asked about it with my contract situation now, whether the security would help and this and that. But you always feel under pressure as a coach. Even the most secure senior coaches, if they lost two or three in a row, like they wouldn't be sitting back sipping Chardonnay. Like they'd be at work, like worrying about where the next win's gonna come from. So you're always feeling that pressure. In this position, doesn't matter how many wins you have in a row, doesn't matter how many losses you have in a row, there's always something that can be done better, or there's always someone who's not quite happy with the position they're in or within the footy club. So there's always things popping up that you have to deal with. So just learn to accept that nothing's going to be perfect and there's always going to be challenges. But as a coach, you're always feeling the pressure of the performance on the weekend. So you just got to try and make sure that you don't let that affect your day-to-day, the way you go about day-to-day work.
Is there a coaching fraternity? Like, does that exist or is that something that's just meandered around a little bit? Do you guys talk to each other? I see like photos and media footage of people walking into coaches' houses with bottles of wine and stuff. Does that sort of thing happen?
I've been invited to Gil's house.
I thought it was a premiership coach that hosted. No, it was Gil's house.
No. Gil used to host dinner at his house for the senior coaches.
And you've never been invited?
Well, it was during COVID. That's what I put it down to. All the invite got lost.
Yeah.
Since COVID, I don't think he had it.
To be honest, that just sounds like someone who wants to like hang out with cool people. So like I'm going to organise a dinner with all the coaches.
Do you guys talk? Like the 17 other coaches?
The guys you know, you do.
Yeah.
Yeah, like when talked to Simo during pre-season, talked to him a bit when we've got some things that we need to do together, and yeah, support each other.
Because you would feel it face very similar issues, whether it's winning or losing, or it's travel from over here in the West, or Freo and West Coast see the same thing.
Yeah,
in a lot.
Yeah,
of-
and that's where the clubs can come together
yeah.
and fight for a common cause. Yeah. And I think behind the scenes, yeah, that happens. Mm. Maybe not necessarily just with me and Simo, but, you know, we're both fighting for the same things, and competitive, especially when it comes to competitive balance. So there is that relationship. There's been a couple of senior coaches that I have lent on, like Chris Fagan. I text him back and forth. He helped me when I was, especially in my time at Collingwood, through Neil Danaher. So yeah, I lean on him a little bit. Just a couple of the other coaches don't necessarily have relationships or have never met. Yes. So yeah, I don't have really anything to do with them. And there probably was times back in the day, maybe pre-COVID or even early in my coaching before COVID hit, we'd have once a year we'd catch up with the AFL Coach Association, but that's sort of gone out the door a little bit as well. Yeah, maybe because me and Sim, I don't want to travel anymore.
So get them over to Perth, mate. Have his Perth. Yeah. Maybe you can host. Maybe that's not
host
it.
To your place.
Why don't you put the invite out? See who comes. No one's available.
I want to drink all that flash wine that they bring anyway.
No, they would bring it, mate. You tell them, bring a bottle of wine with you. You don't have to do anything.
Yeah, but get a slab you of that.
What? Shelters? Yeah.
Single fin.
Yeah, correct.
Yeah. Or you just invite them all over and then just lock the door and it's just a prank. Just to get to all the other coaches. It's good stitching.
Now, before you answer that, we need to keep moving because we've got to get you out the door because you're a busy man. Match committee. Years gone by, I hear stories, you know, a slab gets put on the table and you both sit around eating pizza and ripping each other's heads off. What's the modern day match committee look like? You've been in West Coast, in Collingwood, in Fremantle's in the last decade.
Yeah, probably been pretty similar at all. To be honest, like usually – 75%, 80% of the team, depending on how you're going, is probably selected.
Right.
You know, there's always a couple of injuries and there's healthy debate over the replacements of those. And usually the way it would work is I would get a sense of all the other coaches and what they're thinking. And if it came down to a decision, if it was a forward, I'd probably lean on our forward line coach. You find in match committee, you end up probably spending the most time on the sub or the guy who has to travel as the extra and the travel player.
People wouldn't know that. So
yeah, so you get a like sub because the sub you sort of go through all the different scenarios. So this guy's carrying an injury, maybe we need cover for him. Opposition's a good running team or this and that. So you do throw around a lot of those scenarios and you probably land on someone who you feel like can have an impact when they come on or play a specific role when they come on. But the travelling player is always one that, I struggle with. It takes a lot of time and there's never a perfect player to be able to fill that role because if they're going to travel, so they miss out on a game of waffle.
Correct. As a player, you'd rather not be this guy.
Oh, absolutely. No, I don't think anyone likes it.
I was here multiple times.
Yeah.
Probably due to you, actually.
Well, flexibility, mate. You're a bit of a utility. How many games are in a row have they played? Do they need a week off? Is that going to affect them? There's a lot of different decisions and you end up wasting more time on that than – not wasting. You end up spending more time on that than what you do with the team, which is a unique thing. And sometimes as an assistant coach, you just sit there and we're going around in circles and you just go, you just want the senior coach to go, make a decision so we can get out of here because we've been in here for too long and we've got other stuff that we'd rather be doing.
We've got to flick to social media.
Yeah, let's run through.
Very good. That's us, Dan and I, questions. We now just want to ask the people to ask you. Heard enough from Dan and I. This is social media, not social. Yep, yeah, very good. Yeah, you like that?
I loved it.
Okay, thank you very much. This is from .bc.
I was too young to attend a coaching clinic in my hometown of Narrabeen, so Justin and Troy came to my house for a kick and a photo. Not a question, but just want to thank you for making a four-year-old's day.
Wow. Remember that, but Narrabeen.
Win a kick to kick with Justin and Troy Lombard.
Well, that's actually nice. Like it is, we are in a fortunate position where we get to do those sorts of things with and for people, and you don't really think it at the time, but it's good that people remember that and appreciate it. Mm. And I'm really grateful that you can actually have that effect on people.
Jack Gray, unofficial.
What moment do you feel prouder over, your goal after the siren or coaching the club to their greatest finals comeback?
I get embarrassed talking about the goal after the siren because it's such an individual thing.
Yes.
So, the 40-point comeback for sure.
Mm.
Great.
Yep.
Saxon underscore Saunas.
Who is the fines master at the club?
It's changed a bit. Blake Akers was it a couple of years ago. And he used to carry one of those portable tap things around.
A square reader.
He used to carry that around the club. So you couldn't escape. You couldn't say, oh, I don't have any cash on me. We'll get your card out, mate. We'll get your phone out and tap it all.
Coaches pay fines?
Nah. I don't think it would be as fun if the coaches were in there with the when they did the fines.
Do you have a current one?
Geordie Clark, I think, is it at the moment. So I'm not sure how it's tracking. I'm not sure how he's going either with it.
Well, this is appropriate. Giles Sinclair.
Would you ever go fishing with Jordan Clark?
I probably wouldn't, no. No, you can't get away from me. He's quite annoying. No, I've actually promised him to take him out on the boat. So I got to live up to that promise.
Very good. Brendan Burks, WA.
What's your favourite TV show?
Oh, TV show.
You have time for that? You have time for TV?
No, I don't really. I've been fond of it. Series at times over my life. Well, Entourage was all-time favourite.
Yeah, really good.
Yeah. I did like Game of Thrones, actually.
Yeah.
I really like Game of Thrones.
Very good.
This is something a little bit different out of my sort of typical genre, but I enjoyed it.
Now, we're going to finish with this one, as we all do. Always do, from the Eggman.
How do you like your eggs from the Eggman?
Poached. Poached.
Okay.
Big egg guy?
Don't mind bacon and eggs. It's probably my go-to.
Very good. Mate, that is us done and dusted. You can follow us on socials, backchat double underscore. Send us an email, get involved, hello@backchatpodcast.com.au. Powered by Paywise this year. Big thanks to Whippersnapper Whiskey, Tab Touch, on board for 2024, Shelter Brewing Co., the Leaderville Hotel, VIP codes over at Patreon for our patrons. You can get all of that at backchatpodcast.com.au. Did you have fun, mate? How was that?
Loved it. Pretty easy. Can't believe I haven't been in here.
Yeah, I know.
Come back.
We would love to have you back. We've got a live show every week. Anytime you got free, you can do it from your office. You can do it wherever you are. Just a couple of minutes. Just give us a little update. See you later. You're happy to maybe do that every week? Maybe
we'll have to take it to the club. See what they say about that.
Very good. Justin Longmuir, everybody. I hope you enjoyed that. We certainly did.
Good stuff.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.